did you want to just tell us a little more about yourself, and then you could jump right into your presentation?
Sure. I actually have it built into my presentation here, so we'll just jump right in. Again, hello, my name is Greg Madden. I am a CISSP Information Security Officer for a company called Virtua Group Corporation. I graduated from Purdue in 2019 with my bachelor's, and currently I just started up pursuing my master's degree. Actually, Professor Fudge is my first teacher or first professor this term. So far, things are going well. Can everybody see my screen?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so just to get things going, a little about me. I am CISSP, Security Plus certified. I got my bachelor's in cybersecurity. I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I was a satellite communications operator in the military, and also was an arms room manager, which is where I really got started in security and learning the process of auditing and the paper trail. Over a decade of IT experience and 6 years of IT security experience. So today we have a few learning objectives. Now, before we start this, I want to preface this with, this class was originally 2 hours, and I've cut this down and chopped some things apart to fit this into the, with a 1 hour time slot. So originally learning objectives were a little bit larger, but I've cut out some of the really low level information just because we don't have time for it. And I'll explain that as we go through. But today we're going to look at differentiating the types of malware and their associated behaviors, identify the tools and techniques used to analyze malware, obviously address virtualization and malware analysis. We're going to understand the process for gathering forensic information, and finally learn how to identify malicious links and attachments to prevent phishing breaches. So this is a big chunk to do. We're not going to get to super deep into all of it, but we're going to do enough so where you learn some malware analysis. So to start things off, before we do anything, personal lab setup. Do not use personal work devices to analyze malware. You're going to use a virtual machine of some sort, a virtual box, or a standalone machine with no connectivity to your internal network. And you can use secondary email addresses to forward things along, cheap one-time USB drives. And here in a second, I'm going to drop a link in here for you guys if anyone is interested. But getting files to practice is actually kind of difficult. Built-in security mechanisms like your own antivirus, your own browsers, will stop you from downloading known malware. So if you want to get started, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Downloading malware is always dangerous, should only be done in controlled setting. These are kind of the prefaces. Make sure that you don't sue me or Purdue Global for telling you this. You are responsible for any malware you download. So if you're trying to learn this and you're interested, that is fine, but just be aware that it's on you. And I'm going to post links, where it says here's a repository, I'm going to post that link when I'm finished here with the slides. So what is malware? Initially, this part of the course, I went through and dove into detail into each one of these different types of malware, addressing the symptoms of each type, how each one propagates, but we're not going to have time for all that today. So I'm going to go over a quick brief overview of each type of malware, and just to give you an idea of what to expect when you see it and some of the symptoms that you might notice. So out the gate, a virus. Viruses is the term that gets used more often than not when we talk about malware. A virus is a piece of malware that is not self-producing, which means that a user has to be interact with the file, with the site. The user required, or the malware requires some form of interaction before it can spread. A worm, on the other hand, is the opposite. A worm can take advantage of network vulnerabilities, of operating system vulnerabilities, and push itself through your network. So it doesn't require any user interactivity. It can just spread. Once you get in, it goes. Trojans are they're malware that essentially hides itself, pretends to be something it's not. Actually, a lot of the time, it pretends to be an antivirus to get you to download it. Rootkits, you'll see a lot of the times in corporations where the whole purpose of a rootkit is to take over the root of your machine, i.e. they're going to get into your root processor, hide themselves, and make it to where even your antivirus isn't going to detect it. The only way to detect rootkits is by looking at spawn processes and tracking registry changes, but we're going to get into some of that, how to do that here in just a minute. Logic bomb is something you'll never see in the real world. They're very rare because they require very specific targeting usually. A logic bomb is just a piece of malware that's designed to go off upon a certain date or certain event. So let's say the event is April 27th at 8 p.m. That would be a logic bomb. Whatever it was, it's designed to run at a certain event or certain time. Spyware, adware is self-explanatory. spyware, we're watching here, ads popping up. Fileless malware is something that's actually relatively newer in that rather than downloading a file, you interact with a malicious website or you interact with a malicious target and they write code directly to your RAM or to your memory. And so there's no file stored for antivirus to even check. It's just code that runs directly to your memory and there's no file to trace it and track it. Now, credential harvesters, it's not really a type of malware. It's more so the piece of social engineering, but because it's one of the more common phishing attachments that I see, I wanted to include it in here. A credential harvester just asks you for your credentials. It's something, usually a PDF of some sort or a Word document that pops up and click here to sign in and then try to gather your credentials. And finally, mobile malware, which is a relatively newer type of malware, in which case Androids are being targeted, iPhones are being targeted. And we're almost to the point now to where you almost have to have antivirus on your phones because every day Google takes down 100 to 200 malicious apps, you know, and iPhone does the same. So things to be aware of. Again, in the full course of this, we would dive down a little more into deeper into each one of these, but we're really going to focus on the actual act of detecting malware. So there are a few different methods used to identify malware and malicious behavior. Generally, these are going to be done automatically by an IDS or intrusion detection system or an IPS. But when manually analyzing malware, we're going to look for the same things that those automatic scanners do. So out the gate, we have signature detection. Every application has a signature. When you run it through a hashing algorithm or when the code is processed in a machine language, there are specific hex strings that will follow it. So for example, if a piece of malware has instructions to download a certain file from a certain server that is unchanging, that code is going to be the same every time it runs. And we can look for those specific signatures. In fact, that's how most antivirus work. Signature detection is what you're doing when you scan a document with antivirus or when you cross-reference a hash of a file. The problem is it only works against known threats. So signature detection is wonderful if it already exists, and we're going to see some tools for this later. But if it's an unknown attack or unknown malware or anything unknown about the process, or even if something's only slightly changed, signature detection won't work. So after that, we have behavioral analysis. And this goes a little bit farther and looks at what an application does to determine whether or not it's malicious. So in this case, let's say we open a Word document, and then there's a code inside of that that tries to start another process or download something from the internet. So even if this strain of malware has never been seen before, the behavior of the application appears to be malicious, so it can be stopped. So in manual detection, we can look at things like that, like dropped files, separate processes that are spawned. Because we're looking at the behavior as opposed to what it is, we're trying to find out what it does, not what it is, we can detect those unknown strains of malware, those zero-day attacks, the previously unknown vulnerabilities and threats to be prepared against them. And the final thing that we're going to discuss but not get into with manual analysis is called anomaly detection. Now, anomaly detection often is confused with behavior detection, but really anomaly detection specifically looks for any activity outside of the norm. So if you open a web browser, for example, traffic to your default homepage, we'll just say it's Google, is generated. So 100 times out of 100 times, you open your web page, your web browser, and traffic to Google is generated. But the 101st time, traffic is generated to Google and something else. It doesn't matter what that something else is, whether or not it actually is malicious. The point is it's outside of our baseline of what we'd expect to see. So and at that point, it would generate an alarm, send an email to the tech, or even potentially block whatever the issue is. It's not looking for specific behaviors, but rather any behavior that's different from a baseline. So in the context of manual analysis, we don't generally use anomaly detection. But if you analyze malware and find a behavior you've never seen before, it can help you identify new strains of malware. So we don't generally do anomaly detection just because we don't always have a baseline to go off of when we're running malware. When you do anomaly detection, you can identify new behaviors that you're not used to. So now moving on to that, we're actually going to look at analyzing malware. So we've discussed how it can be detected, but how do we actually analyze it? Well, there's two methods of analysis. That's static and dynamic. There's plenty of free tools to do both. But before we look into it too deeply, there's one concept we have to understand, that not all malware can be analyzed the same way. Some malware authors go to great lengths and take great caution in hiding the real activities of their malware. And this is a process called obfuscation. So again, this is the process of hiding, concealing code, whatever it is, to make it more difficult to analyze. One way to look at this is, you know, rather than type out the word hello, you could create four variables and assign a letter. There's only four different letters in the word hello, H-E-L-O. And then you can spell out hello with 1, 2, 3, 3, 4. So, you know, we're hiding it. Or like this example on the screen, making the code more difficult to read. So 10 plus 10 equals 20. That's easy. Everyone can see that. Makes sense. Perfect. But we drop one down a line, and this is the exact same problem. It ends up being the same. Within the parentheses, it's 10 plus 10 equals 20. But I've gone to lengths to make that more difficult for you to identify out the gate. And that's the simplest form of obfuscation. And the goal being, again, to make sure that the code is more difficult to read. If a security professional is able to view the source code, or if malware is obfuscated, you know, the static analysis can sometimes be almost impossible. And that's where we would move to dynamic. But to kick things off, again, on the screen, you might not be able to see it because this is kind of a small image. But this is a perfect example of obfuscation. There's a function of set text with a function of data, inference of data. And we drop down and it says function GHDS3XN. If you look at that, out the gate, you can't tell what it is exactly. But it's the exact same code written and rehashed in a way that makes it more difficult to understand right away. All right, so static analysis. This is the act of gathering information about a file or an application without actually running it. All right, this can be as simple as looking at the file extension, or as detailed as using tools to, you know, search for specific malicious indicators in the code. One of the purposes of the static analysis is to identify these indicators of compromise, IOCs. And these can range from IP addresses, strings, file names, et cetera. Anything that you can use to identify the malware or the behavior itself is called an IOC. So if, for example, you uncover an IP address in a file, you can then search that IP. And if it's malicious, then you know that likely the file is malicious as well. And that's basic, that's static analysis at a very basic level. Again, there's tons of free tools you can use to statically analyze malware. And we're going to talk about a few. So one of the most basic forms of static analysis is simply running an antivirus check on a file. That's going to check, again, the signature detection, but it's the easiest form. So if you've never done any form of malware analysis in your life, all you got to do is go to a file, right click and file and scan, and you perform malware analysis at the most basic level. Now, again, most antivirus simply use a database of strings or signatures to cross-reference, but more advanced antivirus can actually perform behavior and anomaly detection. So it's worth noting that not all antivirus is the same. You know, there are some that update their signatures every hour. There's some that update their signatures every day, once a week. It really depends. And so whenever you're choosing an antivirus, those are actually some things to take into account of how current and up-to-date your signature database is to be able to scan against, you know, what the information you're looking for. There are hash values. Now this we're going to start actually looking at some of the tools now and how we can begin using them. So hashing, if you're not familiar, it's a one-way encryption, and it's used to create a signature of a file that will never change. So regardless of how big your file is, how much text you have, the hash will always be the same length. And as long as nothing within the file changes, the hash will never change. So that means if you take a hash from a piece of malware, as long as the code doesn't change, right, as long as everything that's a part of that malware doesn't change, it's going to produce the same hash every single time. So this is useful not only in identifying malicious files, but also ensuring files you download haven't been altered in any way. And I have a quick little video here to show you just to see how hash values work. I'm going to make this larger on the screen for you real quick. Can everybody see this? I'm going to send you. Okay. Now I'm going to pull this and be quiet for a second. You might need to turn your volume up a little bit because this was recorded a while ago before I had a better mic. So, but I'm going to play for just 1 second and let you see how happy it works.
Seeing that, Greg. Sorry.
You're not seeing the screen?
No, I see the screen where you were clicked to the video and then it didn't go to the video. Sorry. But you can share this link with us externally if you want us to look at it later and just listen.
So are you guys able to see the video, this video on the screen right now?
No. I'm still seeing I think it's a PowerPoint that I'm still seeing because the link for the video is there and when you went to click it, it didn't launch.
Okay. Hang on 1 second, because I'll skip this individual one. Can you guys see the YouTube on the screen now?
No.
Okay. Hang on 1 second then. Let me change one thing in my Google Meet here so I can share properly.
Yeah, probably opened another window.
1 second.
Okay. And I can barely hear it. I don't know about everybody else, but I can hear it, but it's low. And I'm up to 100% on my speakers, but I don't have really great speakers either.
Okay, now can you see the?
We're seeing YouTube now.
Okay, I'm going to just a brief overview. We're already at a point to where you can see what's happened. In this second, I have downloaded this MSI installable here, and using the PowerShell command git file hash, I'm going to cross-reference that. So I'm going to let this continue playing since it's almost over, just so you can see how it actually works.
If not, that means something has changed. Either the browser has injected something into the download, or the download has been switched. Maybe the website has been hacked, and they're pushing a Trojan on you. But that's how you can cross-verify. So now that we've downloaded that file, we can run it to our test directory here and run the same thing. Get a file hash this time. Plug in Hexinator.
I don't think there's a video on the screen.
089322 with our hash.
Okay, that's what we'll do for the rest of these. I have all these pulled up. It's kind of difficult to share video within Google Meet. So here is the link to that. I will let you guys take a look at that. On the next one, I will just share that link and everybody can watch that together instead of wasting that time. Because it's like, I think I told initially, this was all kind of, everything is timed out for specific hit points. So that video, feel free to watch that afterwards. Basically, it just shows you how to go in and grab a file hash, the hash of a file, and then how that's useful, not only in analyzing malware, but in verifying your downloads. So back into the presentation here. Okay. Next we have HexDump. And as mentioned in the signature detection slide, every application will be translated to machine language when it's in use. And this is something annotated in hex, as you see on the screen, hexadecimal. With tools like HexDump, you can actually view that machine language of a file or application and look for signs of malware. And you can gather a lot of information about files by reviewing their hex. So I'm going to drop another link in here for you. And this one, I'm just going to let you guys go and take a look at it. It's only 2 minutes or 3 minutes. You don't have to watch the full thing. Just let me know when you're done, and we will continue.
Greg, by the way, this is Gus Gomez. The YouTube screen is still playing. It's still displaying, I should say.
Oh, it looks like he kicked himself out, too. He'll be right back. There he goes.
Yep, sorry about that.
You kicked yourself right out.
Okay. So you said you can still hear that YouTube, Gus?
We were seeing the screen, but no, it's quiet now, so you can carry on.
Yeah, it's quiet now. Yes, thank you, Greg.
Okay, sorry about that. So, did everybody see that link I just dropped in the chat a moment ago?
Yes.
Yes.
So go ahead, check that out. Review that and let me know when you guys are finished with that, and we'll continue.
Okay. Sure.
So if you're watching that, you're probably already past the brunt of it. The point of this video is just to see how to use it, what you can identify quickly. You can identify things such as the file type. You can identify information about the file if it's not encrypted. There's a lot of information about this that you can find within the hex dump. And you'll notice a lot of tools that we use have hex dumps built into them. And one of them we'll talk about here soon is Wireshark. So hex dump, that's that in a nutshell. Again, you can quickly grab the hex of any file application you're working with. The next thing we're going to discuss is something called virus total. Now, if antivirus is the first step in static analysis, why use one scanner when you can use 60? Virus total, it runs files or IOCs through over 60 different antivirus engines. And I'm actually a little behind schedule on this, so I'm just going to link this one directly into the chat, and we can watch this one. This one is actually really useful for about the first 2 minutes as well. Again, we'll cut this out. 1 second, put this in chat for you. Now, this is if you've never used VirusTotal before or haven't heard of it, this is an amazing tool. Not enough security professionals use this. Watch the video, see how it works, and let me know when you're finished. And again, I apologize, those videos aren't playing. Everything's linked in. Something's just not working properly. So my apologies for that. And again, just to try to catch back up to my time here, if you started watching that when I submitted that, you're already through about a minute and a half. And that's really, again, the point of that, of this video, is to show you how it works, how it can be used, how to use those files, URLs, IOCs, anything you find, you can drag and drop into VirusTotal. And it's going to give you a very detailed breakdown of you know, all the different virus scanners that go with it, any additional IOCs that are found within it. Even if you have no clue, you've never done malware analysis before, you can drag and drop into VirusTotal to get your feet wet and start recognizing and learning terminology. So beyond VirusTotal, those were the brunt of static analysis. Again, this course was a little longer originally, where we actually dive into looking at some hex dumps and actually going through the lab portion of it. But we're going to actually jump into dynamic analysis next. And dynamic analysis is the process of, if static analysis is looking at files that haven't been opened, we're just looking at them unopened. Dynamic analysis is actually opening and running the file to see what happens, to see what it does. And the first thing we're going to talk about is a sandbox. So a sandbox is a secure environment where you can run suspected malware without the risk of that malware tearing through your networks. You can set up standalone laptops. You can build a full-on virtual subnet to test. And Windows actually even has a built-in sandbox if you have Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise. You just have to enable it in Windows features. But the purpose of a sandbox is allow you to look at, you know, what a file does when it's run. Things that you can't see with static analysis, like new services that are opened or files that are installed. And for this video here, I'm going to show you a product called Falcon Sandbox. And out the gate, I'm going to recommend you, if you've never done malware analysis, save this link. Save the Falcon Sandbox. Google it, and it's actually in the bottom. I put all the tools in the comment section of each of these YouTube videos. So Falcon Analysis is an amazing tool that it literally, again, this course is designed for people that aren't experts. This is going to get you learning and understanding how malware analysis works. And go ahead and watch that video. This one is good. I'm going to let you watch the entire thing here because this one is probably the most detailed video to explain some of the malware analysis. So I'm going to let you get a chance to look at this. Come back, comment done when you're completed, and we'll carry on. Okay, so we should be having people finishing up here. Now, that was your introduction to Falcon Sandbox. Again, if you have never used that before, familiarize yourself with it. Save the link. The link is in the description of that YouTube video. Save that, favorite it, whatever you want. Anytime you get a malware, an email you're not sure of, as we're going to discuss here in a minute, throw it in there, and you're going to learn and start to understand how malware analysis works. And you'll be able to do some of these things yourself. So beyond just using, you know, an automated tool like Falcon Sandbox, there are other tools you can use yourself. So that, as I mentioned in the very beginning of the seminar, you're going to want your own virtual environment, your own standalone machine. But once you have that machine, what are you going to put on it? Well, the first tool we're going to discuss is called Process Explorer. It's essentially, it's going to let you do the more hands-on dynamic analysis. It's essentially a task manager on steroids. It displays process information in great detail, laying out, you know, hierarchical information and connecting processes to services or applications. It also allows you to search the processes within Google. So if you have a process running within your Process Explorer, you can just click it and hit search, right click it and search, and it will open that process up in Explorer in Google and tell you exactly what it's used for, whether or not it's known, and whether or not there are any malicious activities associated with that service or with that process. Now, beyond Process Explorer, there's something called ProcMon, or Process Monitor, which we use for real-time analysis of process change. So Explorer lets you see everything. ProcMon lets you identify only those new processes or only look at specific registry changes. ProcMon and Process Explorer are often used in conjunction with each other. But ProcMon makes it more obvious as to what the changes to a system has been made as opposed to just displaying details. So Process Explorer will go a little deeper and show you more information about those processes. And ProcMon is, again, used for those real-time changes, looking for, you know, logging resource requests and, you know, whether access was denied, everything in real time that's happening. RedShot is a tool that, where those other two were looking at processes and task managers, RedShot is going to essentially capture a snapshot of your registry settings. And in a sandbox setting, you'd open it up, run RedShot, and then you run your malware and then run RedShot again to determine if any of your registry keys were changed. So it'll go through and tell you, like it says on the image here, after running some malware, we ran RedShot and we can see three keys were added and four values were added to those different keys. So it just tells you right away if whatever you ran modified your registry settings at all. Now, I mentioned the virtual network and virtual environment. We've talked about some specific tools so far, but to truly analyze malware and get started doing it yourself, you almost need a full virtual network. So as I've already mentioned, some malware looks for specific identifiers to determine whether or not a host is real or if it's in a sandbox. The malware can look for open ports or network traffic. You know, if you're within a real environment, you would expect to see a certain number of DNS requests, a certain number of ARP requests. You're going to expect to see some of that information. And if malware doesn't see that, if it starts listening on a port and it doesn't detect any, you know, normal, regular network traffic, it won't even run. And so you can set up and build an entire virtual network that mimics a real network, which allows you to ensure that the malware you're looking at actually activates as it should. There's nothing worse than a false negative. In this case, we run something, we think it's clear because no malware pops up, no processes are generated. But in reality, no processes were generated because the malware checked and realized it was in a VM in a fake environment, you know, sanitized. There was no reason for it to run. Ergo, we had no changes to track. Nothing we could see made sense. So in our eyes, it looked like it was good because nothing popped up. But if you don't have a real environment that can emulate those network protocols that you're going to see in a normal network, you won't be able to truly identify some of the more advanced tactics and techniques that you'll find in malware. So InetSim is a Linux tool you can use. You can download it yourself, and it emulates common network services. App8DNS is another one. If you watch the Falcon Sandbox video, you'll notice that they they recognized the file was reaching out to certain DNS servers. Well, App8 DNS will actually spoof those DNS servers. So the malware will reach out and App8 DNS will respond as if it is that DNS server. That way you can gather the information that would go back and forth between the DNS server and the distant end and the malware that we've installed. So again, the whole point of the virtual network is to ensure that we don't have the false negative. In malware analysis, the false negative is the worst thing we can have. I'd rather have a false positive all day, every day than a false negative. So this one, I have a video here for this as well, but we're not gonna watch that one because of the time here. But another useful tool for malware analysis is Wireshark. Because like we saw in the Falcon Sandbox, malware often reaches out to malicious servers to download additional malware or get instructions from CNC servers or to allow the attacker to remote in automatically. And identifying those network connections a machine makes when malware is run is crucial in identifying the source of malware to block it outright. So you can use tools like Wireshark to capture files and even capture files being downloaded over the internet or see if sensitive data is being leaked out as long as it's not being encrypted. Again, the demo I had here, it just kind of shows how Wireshark works. We're not gonna, I'll link that one as well in case you want to see it, but we're not gonna actually sit down and watch that one because we're not gonna have enough time to get through all of this. So let me link that in chat real quick. Can't see the slides. Well, hang on a second, it says it's sharing the screen.
Yeah, I'm seeing YouTube now. The Wireshark demo there. Oh, there's your chat.
Hang on a second. It started sharing a new screen. It's always something. One second. I'm just going to slide this over to the next screen here. I apologize for that. Okay, now it's this is on, should be on the correct screen. You should see honeypots. All right. Can everyone see this honeypot on the screen now?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so honeypot is just a trap to either study attackers or at the very least lure them away from your critical assets. That's advanced malware hunters can utilize them. And they can, you know, analyze attacker behavior, identify new techniques that attackers are using, and identify new strains of malware that are being implemented before they're being sent out via phishing. They're really useful for advanced security specialists, but honestly, for the most part, I hate them. My analysis or my analogy for honeypots is, a honeypot is the whole analysis. It's a bear. You're tricking a bear with honey. And when bears get mad, they can cause some damage. So I don't like honeypots. I think a lot of organizations set them up because they're told about them, they hear about them, and they think they're useful. But unless you have a top tier security team in place, honeypots should be avoided because if you don't know how to combat an attacker that can get in, all you're doing is inviting them into your network. So avoid honeypots, with the exception of a few. There are different kinds for different analysis. There are honeypot web servers, database servers, email servers, and there are a few web servers that simply exist to allow you to research attack methods. So they're not housed in your own DMZ. They're not housed locally. They're online web servers that you can purchase just to watch, see how attackers work and how they move. But for all other purposes, I would avoid honeypots if I were you, just because they can invite bad actors a little deeper if they want to go. So the static analysis methodology is pretty straightforward. We start off, we're going to scan with local antivirus. Step one, anything happens, I'm scanning it with local antivirus. I'm going to upload it to VirusTotal and take those hash values, search for malicious strings, throw the file in the sandbox and so forth. And about every single step of the way, I'm going to be investigating those IOCs. So if I uncover, upload to VirusTotal and I uncover an email address or an IP address, then I can check and scan that IP address. I can Google that IP address and see if it's in any databases. IBM X-Force is a good resource for checking the validity of IP addresses. And that's the course of static analysis. For dynamic analysis, it's a little bit different because we have to take a full snapshot of our machine prior to conducting any analysis. We, you know, we want to have a blank slate, start off fresh. We're going to take snapshots of our registry. We're going to turn on our process monitor and explorer and prepare TCP view, which is, we didn't discuss that again because I had to cut this down. But TCP view is another network monitor similar to Wireshark that it watches for TCP connections and analyzes TCP traffic. So you can see in real time when something reaches out and makes TCP connections within your sandbox. Once everything's ready to go, we ensure the virtual network is up and running, that we have that virtual traffic in place so that any malware that does run recognizes and thinks it's in a real network. And then we run the malware. And that's the process from beginning to end. But the most common use case that I see all the time, and I already mentioned this in chat, one of the most common things people ask me for is whether or not this attachment is safe or whether or not this link is safe. And this is what most people are going to use this presentation for and learning how to go through. Let's say you're a help desk or you just got a job as a security specialist and you get 20 emails a week of someone saying, hey, is this email good? Is this safe to open? And I get that. I get at least 10 of those a week where I have to go through. And this is the process I take. So to start off with, the simplest form of analysis for emails is to look at the email header, looking for mismatched sender address. You can tell if the sender email was spoofed. You can tell where the email originated of. Anything you need to find out, essentially a quick reference, you can see if the file was legitimate or not. Now, on this screen, I don't know if you can see my cursor or not, but there's a it's not going to work for me on this one. I have a video here. I'm just going to copy this video and share this to you. We're not going to have time to watch this one, but this is one you definitely should watch if you have the time to, just because it gives you a real quick analysis on how to analyze headers and some of the specific information you want to look at when you're analyzing headers. The biggest problem with headers is that people get scared because there's a lot of information in them, and it doesn't go well. You look into it, and it's confusing. Yeah, I can send Dr. Burton, if you want, I can send you a copy of this presentation and you can send it to everybody so they have this directly. But that this video essentially shows you, there's a few things we look at. Our SMTP from attribute within our authentication results, and we're gonna look at the reply to. If you cross-correlate those two, you can tell almost right away whether or not something is genuine, whether or not something is malicious. So beyond the email headers, the next thing, if I look at the email headers and I'm not sure, the very next thing, if it's a link, I'm going to drop that link into VirusTotal. First thing, I don't care what happens, it's going in VirusTotal. Now, there's a few other tools we haven't discussed, but one of them is called Scan URL, and there's also website screenshots. Now, these are tools that you can use, and you can Google these, and again, we'll try and send this PowerPoint out. But website screenshots, for example, will open up and run the website, and it will capture a screenshot of what that landing page looks like. So if it's something you're unexpected and you can look and see it's an obvious Office 365 fish or it's an obvious PDF fish, you don't have to go any farther. So once I check it, the links within things and I can tell it's good, you know, or sorry, if I can tell it's bad from that, I kill it, I'm done. But if I still haven't found out, if I'm not sure, then you can take those attachments and do the same thing. I'm going to throw that attachment into VirusTotal. If I don't get anything, if it doesn't tell me it's bad, then I'm going to put it in Falcon Sandbox and let that go. And if it's still not bad, then I'm going to use a program like PE Studio. Again, another one we didn't get to cover in this class because of the time frame. But PE Studio essentially looks for malicious signatures and malicious strings. It's an all-encompassing tool that if you're interested in analysis, I encourage you to go Google it, take a look at it. But also beware of multiple extensions. So I don't even have to, you probably might be able to see the image on the screen because it's small. But the attachment here is a .wav.eml. So there's multiple extensions, which right out the gate tells me something's not right, something's bad, and it's probably going to be a piece of malware or malicious in general. So I'm going to tell whoever asked me, no, this is not a good one. So we can't discuss looking at malware analysis without touching on digital forensics. There's an actual chain of a process that we take, but the very first thing we do, anytime we suspect malware, someone opened malware, the first thing we do is seize the device, right? The device cannot be left on the network. A lot of people want to go check it out or, you know, maybe take a look remote into it. But if there's any suspicion at all that malware was ran on a device, seize it, get it off the network right away. You don't always want to shut it down because information can be gathered from memory or from browser histories or things like that. But you want to get it offline so that it's no longer connecting back to any CNC servers. After that, we also want to acquire, with data acquisition, we want to get that information off of that device. Now, we're going to capture, like I said, everything from RAM, hard drives. We're going to make a copy of running processes, browser history. We're going to run Netmon and capture network connections. We're even going to copy clipboard contents. Once you have a machine in place that malware has been run on, as I told you earlier, there's all kinds of malware. Some runs in RAM. Some runs, you know, directly put into your CPU. Some of it is just files. So we got to capture everything that we possibly can for forensic analysis. And one of the tools you can use is called FTK Imager. And I actually believe we used this when I was going through for my bachelor's in the forensic analysis class. But FTK Imager is a free product. There's an open source, if I remember correctly. But it's going to create forensic images. And it's going to actually have built-in chain of custody controls. So if you needed to sue someone or if you know, you had to take that information to court, you could use it if you had to. It also generates hash files so that we can verify that the image hasn't changed at all over the course of the, you know, however long you maintain that. Now, we're not going to get into forensic analysis in this course because that gets, again, a little more deeper. But a lot of companies will retain a third-party forensic analyst just to do some of this work on them on the back end to take things off their hand because, you know, having a full-time forensic analyst on staff can be a little expensive. So keep that in mind once you, if you're in a security position, having someone on hand is to do forensic analysis is great, but most organizations don't. I mean, make sure you have someone in mind. If you don't, have someone on retainer. So conclusions today. There's dozens of free tools to begin analyzing malware. We touched on a few of the major ones today: VirusTotal, Falcon Sandbox, Procmon, Process Explorer, Hexinator. There's a lot of tools you can use for free that are readily available that don't require you to have a degree in malware analysis. When I first started getting into it, I had never done it before. I was given a task to help out someone and had to Google it and figure it out myself. And luckily through college, we learned some different processes and learned some tools. But it's also worth noting practicing can be difficult. You know, it's hard to get those files. Having a real good environment set up is difficult. So if you're just getting started, if you don't have a full-blown security team dedicated, stick to the basics. Use VirusTotal, Falcon Sandbox. And if you can't do more than that, don't worry. That is a great start to get you going. And as you familiarize yourself with those tools, then you'll be a better malware analyst down the road as you understand what those tools do for you. VirusTotal is one of the greatest tools of all time. It's built into so many different tools. Falcon Sandbox is built into a few things now, but as someone mentioned in chat, it was purchased out and it's run by a different company now. But the tool still exists to use it. Malware is often obfuscated, so if you do, you know, open up Hexinator or you try to capture some traffic, don't be discouraged because most malware today is obfuscated and you're going to have to use some form of dynamic analysis. Finally, capture your infected images. If you think malware was run at all, capture an image, all right? You may not use it for litigious purposes, you may not sue anybody, but if that virus pops back up and you realize you didn't get it all, if you maintain that image, you can go back and see how it actually started so you can prevent that in the future. Do I have any questions? No questions. I'm sure there might be. I'm gonna email this presentation to Dr. Burton, and I don't know if you can just send it out to everyone, Doctor.
Yep.
There's all the notes and everything are included in the slides and links to all the videos so they can go through and watch it themselves. I really apologize. When I went through my test, I didn't have any issues. So I don't know if Google Meet's not working right or if it's my computer, but Did not want to have to make you go and watch it on YouTube. I was hoping to display that for you guys. So
yeah, thank you. That's fine.
I apologize, and I'll get this sent over. I appreciate everybody's time and this evening. If you have any other questions, look me up on LinkedIn. My name is Greg Madden. Feel free to reach out. I'm also currently a master student at Purdue. And just real quick, before I turn it back over, someone mentioned the cyber defense program at Purdue, the National Collegiate Cyber Defense Team. If you go to Purdue, look into it. It's a great way to get into understanding malware analysis and defending against attacks.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this was very good. And no worries about the links. I think a lot of faculty do like field trips in their seminars to take people out to YouTube videos too when it's pertinent. So I think that worked out fine. I will send the PowerPoint. And I think you know, Greg, what happens is that we turn these into podcasts. So they won't necessarily see your slides, but I will send out the slides to everybody on the invite for their own information. And the recording actually gets attached. The original recording gets attached to the invite if anybody wants to go back to see that. And then again, the podcast will be available on our website as well. So I think this was awesome, though. Very informative. Thank you so much for coming. And we'll definitely have to have you come back in year two of your second degree. you'll know even more, right?
That's why I'm planning on it.
That's awesome. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone's time tonight. I really, really apologize for being late tonight. And then thank you, Gus and others, for pinch hitting for me. I appreciate it. I think everyone should have a good evening. Thank you so much, Greg. Bye, folks. Have a good night. Thanks, Greg. Bye.
Thanks, Greg. Awesome job. Bye.